Thank you very much for coming. Welcome to my presentation about the automated testing of a phone operating system. So my name is Luca Weiss. My day job is in the OS longevity team at Fairphone. At the same time, I'm also a PostMarketer's core contributor and also an OpenRazor maintainer in my free time. This is my talk. You can find my Mastodon link here and also my website in case you want to see more. So let's start with a bit of an introduction. Like, who of you knows PostMarketer's? Oh, that's very nice. For all the other ones, PostMarketer's essentially our tagline is the Linux distribution for mobile devices and beyond. We focus really on having a fully open source user space and kernel space, of course. So having no proprietary software in there at all. We really want to have this project going for a long time and have the devices supported for a long time. So we don't do a lot of device-specific code that's only applicable for one device, but we try to make everything as generic as possible. There are some device-specific adaptations, but they're usually just a few lines of code, essentially, or a few lines of configuration. And we also try to actually go in the direction of having generic device packages, so where we can share even more of these configurations between devices. We are a completely independent project. We don't have any corporate backing or anything. Everyone's essentially a volunteer. And we are getting funded through donations, where we can nowadays do a few projects. For example, some voice call audio project to get this upstream. The distribution is based on Alpine Linux, which is a Linux distribution that you may know from Docker and other embedded use cases. Essentially one of the also taglines of the project is, you get a package manager. You can just run the APK package manager, the Alpine package keeper, and install whatever package that you want on your phone, on your tablet, or on your smartwatch, even in theory. Essentially on top of Alpine Linux, we are providing tooling. So this is our PM Bootstrap tool, which you can use to build packages, to build images, to do a lot of things which are very handy for developers. We have some additional packages on top of Alpine Linux, even though we try to actually move most of the package, or at least we have moved a lot of packages that were previously in the PostMarketer's repos actually into Alpine itself, because it's much easier to maintain there, because also in theory Alpine Linux users can use it without having to add the PostMarketer's repositories on top. We have build infrastructure, which is used for building the packages that we have and building the images that we have, and some other things. And we have documentation, which is essentially our wiki and our docs.postmarketos.org page. Since most of you know PostMarketer's, you probably also know kind of what state we're in right now. So we are not a completely fully featured mobile operating system that just your grandma can use or can install on their phone. We started out as essentially you have an old phone in your drawer and you can put Linux on it and it's amazing. And you can SSH into the phone. Oh my God. The times have changed quite a bit. This is possible on hundreds of devices, without any issue right now. And now we are actually more trying to make it more usable and trying to make it stable and try to make it more feature complete, so that people have a good user experience. Some devices work quite well, some a bit less. It really depends on the device itself, what features are enabled in the kernel, mostly. And on the right side, you can see sort of a feature table, which I took from the Fairphone 5. You can see some things are partial, NFC is still broken, and fingerprint is broken. This is working on not really any device, and a bunch of other things are working. We are in a fairly good state, but we are still far away from we don't have any device that is 100%, or we don't have a phone that's 100% feature complete in that sense. For a bunch of devices, the kernel support is lacking. For example, no NFC driver in the kernel yet, so then user space, of course, can't make use of the NFC hardware. But no, it's the software support in the user space is actually lacking on several things. So NFC is actually a good example. Like, there's not really, there's some NFC user space libraries, but nothing's really working well. And like, this, it's not integrated into any applications. There's not even really a application to like just read a NFC tag, which is like the most basic feature you would want to have with NFC. But for sure, we support already enough functionality on devices that it's actually that we actually need to invest quite some time in it into it to actually ensure that it keeps working on like if when upgrading like essentially any system package, but also upgrading more device-specific packages like the kernel package. Yeah, so for this, we currently essentially do manual testing. So there's some people who volunteer the time in the so-called testing team, which is essentially a wiki page where people can write down their GitLab username and which device they have and which UI they're using. And then we can ping them in GitLab on relevant changes. So then they get like this, please try this out once CI passes. Testing instruction can be found here. And like with the MR test tool, then people can grab the packages, the build packages from the merge request on GitLab and install it on their device and then get essentially a preview and can try it out if it works correctly for them. This is super useful, especially on like kernel upgrades, because then like different people can essentially try this out before like everybody gets it. So it's essentially a sort of testing or staging way to do this without actually doing this in a specific repository. And yeah, manual testing is just time intensive. Like to actually try all of the things that are listed there, it takes for sure like 15 minutes. And of course, different people will have different SIM cards, will have maybe slightly different variants of the same device. So like it's really good to have multiple people try this out and also to just get essentially confirmation of it doesn't just work for me, but it also works for other people before shipping it out to everybody. We do have a sort of test template with a relatively basic test plan. So this is the one you see in the right here, where it's probably not really readable on the projector. But essentially, yeah, so like it's automatic screen rotation works, the brightness control works, the touch works, the buttons work, along with like, I don't know, the flashlight is working and the speakers are working. So like fairly basic things, but still a good list to go through. But then at the same time, we're also lacking a really detailed test plan. So like if you want to ensure like everything is working, which also includes like functionality that is not enabled yet, like this, we don't have this yet. So for example, I mean, their test plan says microphone works. Modern devices have at least 3 microphones, and there's the headset microphone, maybe some other special microphones or like ways to input sound into the device. So like we don't have any test plan for that. There's like random components like the EEPROM on cameras, like a small storage thing essentially. Different call modes, like if you do a voice call and you, for example, go on speaker or you mute your own device or you put the call on the pause thingy, so like where the other participant then gets like the beeping sound essentially. Like for some things, you just need special hardware. Like it's not just the device. So if you want to test this feature called USB audio offloading, you need a USB-C headphones. If you want to test analog audio over USB-C, then you need like a different headphone adapter, which is not USB, but like is muxing audio over the USB-C pins. And essentially, it's like different things. And with different external displays, maybe it's working with one, but not the other. And USB hubs and everything. So this is really, like to have a really complete overview of the whole system is not really possible right now. This is kind of what we have with manual testing. But yeah, since phones are complex and you want to test things more often, you can't really rely on just manual testing. If you want to try the newest kernel version or the newest image version even from every day and run a test plan, then somebody would need to spend 15 minutes every day to run this and not make any mistakes and not get tired of it. Essentially, this is also one of the main things. So like regarding automated testing, we also essentially don't really have any manufacturer support. So like most devices that are supported, the manufacturer is probably not even aware that that this is a thing. For some it is, but then yeah. It's like I'm of course a bit in a special situation since my day job is at Fairphone and I'm working on Fairphone devices for PostmarketOS. Also in my free time, then like I'm sort of the mix in between. But it's like essentially, especially the big smartphone companies, like there's no support at all regarding this. And yeah, the more devices we get and the more functionality each device gets, the more testing needs to be done. It's like then maybe the test plan is not just 15 minutes, but maybe 45 minutes. And then it really gets less feasible to do. While developing, I would say new functionality is quite fun because you get, yes, this is finally working. But then ensuring for the next 5 years that this continues to work is quite boring. And when you then, and finding if doing this for 5 years and maybe in the 3 year mark you find, it's actually broken right now, okay, and then you can fix it again. But just going along and trying always to see if it works is quite boring in that sense. So like because then we essentially right now we don't really have much automated testing. Like the reliability is probably a bit affected because of that, and yeah, people just get tired of it maybe. So we really want to have some automated testing in the project on devices. So for example, to test some inner DramaFS changes because they're quite deep in the system, and if we support a lot of different ways of booting up. So then if we can just test it, or like if we do a change and we can try it on like 10 different devices and we see, okay, it boots on all of the 10 different devices, then we are way more confident that it's actually a good change and that we can roll this out to the rest of the people. As I said, yeah, with kernel upgrades, things just can break because of changes that were done. So trying to get them run in automated way it would be super nice. And also even, yeah, like having nightly kernel builds. So like the latest Linux kernel release candidates or even Linux Next, which is essentially the newest changes that are available in Linux. Having them tested even nightly would be super nice because then you can really find regressions early and you can start fixing them early or reporting them early and not just already when the Linux version has been released. So there was an initial attempt to get hardware CI working in 2022. This was funded from NLNet and the NGI0 PET funds. And it was a kind of custom system, so it was built on a Raspberry Pi Pico with some custom firmware and then like a sort of web application on top that was keeping track of which hardware was available and scheduling the jobs to be on the correct devices. Quite some work was done there. You can see some pictures here from how it looked like back then. You can also see the batteries are still in devices, which I will come to later. But unfortunately, it really failed to get to a level where we could actually start using it. So it was just a kind of a prototype stage, unfortunately. But then by doing this, like we were already learning quite a few things. First of all, I mean, it's just difficult to make a good continuous integration system, especially with hardware in a loop, because we need the hardware to be reliable. And yeah, there was just no perfect system for exactly what we wanted available. So that's why also a lot of things were built from scratch back then. But then kind of if we take something that is like covering 70% of what we want and adapting this to what we need is probably the best solution that we want. And it's good to start from a simple way, like get something working that's already helping quite a lot, and then you can always expand from that and make it better and make it be more exactly what you're envisioning. And hardware CI is not something you build over 2 weeks. You really need it's really a long project to get everything, all of the pieces together and working together. And also since 2022, we are also handling projects quite a bit better. So like back then was a bit of free form, like somebody did something. It's like now we actually try to manage the project a bit better. So like try to communicate between the different stakeholders and figure out the better solutions there. So that brings me to the Postmarketers Hardware CI, so like the current project that we are currently still busy building. It's like the project was picked up again at the end of 2024. And yeah, like as I said in the previous slide, we tried to find something that at least fits what we really wanted and we can could be expanded on top. It couldn't be too complex because then it takes a lot of effort again to like get anything working. And yeah, we really wanted to have it be to make sure that some that specific functionality on specific devices is reliable, to make it easier for contributors to try out changes, and then yeah, having essentially long term to have multiple places where this board farm, where like a board farm with a couple of devices would be. Because we can't, like as a project, we can't have, let's say, envision, okay, we want to have like 100 devices in a rack there, and everybody just sends in their devices and we place them there, because it's just not feasible, because nobody has their that space and where they live, and we don't want to rent a place to be able to do this, and we can't really pay anybody to do this and like take care of that. So like having multiple smaller board farms essentially. Would be the way to go there. So in this Postmarketers Hardware CI project, we are now using CI-tron, which is a bare metal automated CI system. We've been developing a custom power delivery unit, a PDU, which we call the phone harness. And we are also then trying to get, or we are integrating these devices then actually into GitLab CI, which is the where we develop the software. To actually just be able to click a button and then the test is running on a physical device somewhere. So to go a bit into CI-tron, what it is, it was developed apparently for the Mesa CI on the Steam Deck, which was mostly funded by Valve, from what I understand. But for sure, it's already used for many years in production in Mesa, so the graphics library for user space. And the design goal essentially was to make it be a plug-and-play CI system. So have it be low maintenance, so you don't have to fuss around with it too much. To have a declarative configuration format for the jobs, so you can control everything, but also not be essentially shell scripts. And it should be easy by default, but be complex when you need it, or like have the extensibility when you need it. So like for Postmarketers, we then contracted the offer of CI-tron in 2025 to kind of complete the use case that was already envisioned beforehand. So like CI-tron was built with our use cases in mind, but the code hasn't been developed yet, or not fully developed at least. So like for example, for Mesa CI, like you actually use a known good kernel to boot the hardware, and then you try the method changes on top, which means you didn't really have to deal with the complexity of like what if the kernel doesn't work and these kind of things. And some of the test templates were also only in part of Mesa CI, and these were integrated back into CI-tron to be able to also be able to reuse them better for Postmarketers. So then also a driver for our phone harness, which I will get to in the next slide, was developed and merged upstream into CI-tron. So that is a driver for the so-called gateway, so a sort of computer that is in that is controlling the PCBs, which are controlling the phones. So then it was also integrated into boot deploy, which is the project we have to build the boot images and everything. So for example, then we can way more easily check if the OnePlus 6, for example, is still booting and is not breaking because of the change that was done in boot deploy. The whole thing was nice, also integrated into PMA ports, our package repository. So you can click a button there. There's now documentation available on the docs.citron.dev domain, and yeah, like we noticed, like barely anybody really wants to look into CI, and also getting volunteers to do this was just not possible. So then contracting is the next best way. So the phone harness, this wonderful 3D render here, it is a PCB, and it's one of the main purposes is to power the phone without a battery, because you don't really want to have batteries in a board farm, because batteries, when they're charged fully for quite a while and the phones are on for the whole time, then they just swell up with time and then they become really not very good anymore, and in the worst case they could catch fire and you don't want this. So then removing the batteries and actually powering the phones or the devices from the wall socket, essentially, like this just removes the whole risk of lithium-ion batteries. By the way, the batteries, like when you use them normally, like they don't just blow up. It's really like in specific use cases which batteries really don't like, of keeping them fully charged the whole time. So like this phone harness, it will connect to the USB port from the phone. So you can, for example, put software, provide software images and do data transfer. It connects to the UART on the phone to get boot up logs and be able to diagnose issues with that. There's also a bunch of accessibility on the board, so you can control buttons with it. I think there's an I2C connector on there somewhere. I think you can do even more with an additional USB-C connector that's there. One of the main points was also the price should be affordable. And to be fully open hardware, because it's an open source project, so it should be open hardware. And I mean, already when we were thinking about this earlier, like we just realized there's no viable commercial products for this, like either too expensive or not really available for, like, let's say customers to buy, and definitely not open source or open hardware to be able to adapt them to our use case. So then Federico and Nicola designed a PCB for us. They spent like more than 6 months on this project with different revisions, like first trying to get the voltage regulation on the board itself. I will get to this next. Currently we are at board revision 0.3, where we've got about 20 of these boards like in the hands of different people to be able to experiment around with them and like hook up some devices. So to get into this to this PCB a bit more, so like the power that the phones are getting is actually directly going into the battery pins of the phones. Like we move the battery and we instead hook up the PCB there. To get the correct voltage and everything there, we are using a power supply, like an external essential USB charger, which is supporting USB PPS, so the programmable power supply specification. And there you can talk to the charger essentially and request the exact voltage that you want. And I believe in like 0.1 volt steps, you can control exactly what voltage you get. And with the chargers that we use, we actually get up to 5 amperes at the exact voltage that we want. So like, it's really super useful for our use case here, which means also like way less complexity on the board itself, because we are not really doing anything with the voltage. We're just kind of requesting the correct voltage from a different, like from a commercial power supply, and just passing it through to the phone. And essentially with this, we can also just power cycle device, because we are the battery. So like we can just cut the power and like reply power back in, and the phone can boot up, and then we can control it again very easily, like in case it has crashed, for example. One of the things is with this PCB is also we only have actually one USB cable between the PCB and the host. So like the machine that's controlling the PCB, which makes this quite useful to not need super many USB ports on the host. So on this graphic, you can see, essentially we have on in a sort of standard setup, we have three connections between the PCB and the phone. So for UART, for the USB-C, so the USB-C connector on the phone, and the battery is being powered by the PCB. I also added like the dashed line for the button control. And then we have like one connector with one USB-C cable, which is coming from the USB-C charger going into the PCB. And we only have this one USB-C cable between the host, which is the gateway then, a CiTron gateway, and the PCB. I wanted to explain a bit more here. This is a bit more than the block diagram. I think you can recognize some of the pieces, like with the power supply on the left, the USB-C charger, the host computer, and the DUT, which is the device under test, which is essentially the phone in this case. We have a PD-Sync controller, which is requesting the voltage and talking to the power supply. Then we have a power switch on the top right, where we can cut the power and reapply it. We have an RP2040 microcontroller in the middle, which is controlling all of the components on the PCB. And yeah, with the UART connection to the phone and with the buttons control that we may want. I think it's right now we don't really have it hooked up on any of the setups that we have. But yeah, you could use it, for example, to hook up to the volume down, volume up buttons, and the power button, or like any other button that you have on the phone to be able to essentially test and see whether they still work. And on the bottom you can see essentially the USB-C from the device is being passed through to the host, so you can still use the USB-C from the device. So to put all of the different parts together that I was talking about, so there is a CiTron driver for this phone harness, so for the PDU to be able to control this PCB from the software that we from the CI software that we have. And with this CiTron can power cycle the device when it's necessary. When the device boots up, then we use Tauchgang, which is a U-boot distribution, to directly boot the phone to fast boot mode. So like every time the phone boots up, it directly goes into fast boot mode and waits there until it gets something. And then from fast boot mode, then CiTron can send the kernel and the inner drum FS to the device and boot it up. here's a sort of a graphic how a board firm would look like. It's at somebody's place, essentially. It's like with one gateway, which could also be a Raspberry Pi or something, or a small computer, with multiple of the PDUs, so multiple of the PCBs, connected via USB-C to the gateway. We have one power supply per PDU, because the devices may get different voltages, and just every device needs their up to 5 volts. And then we have one device connected to each of the PCBs that we have. The whole thing can be then integrated into GitLab quite easily with what we have. On the right you can see where a GitLab CI job was run on the OnePlus 6 or 6T, I'm not sure which one this is. It's starting to run, and I'm just executing. I was apparently talking too much at the stand today. When the device or kernel packages are changed in PMA ports, then we can automatically generate this hardware CI job and make it available there. And we have some essentially basic tests for some devices in the post-Mongodos test package, where we can already run a few things. But our test curve or what we can test right now with the tests we have is quite limited. Also the jobs are not executed automatically, what we have, but they are executed manually. So like somebody from the team needs to essentially approve and click the button to start the test. Because we also know that, the wind is coming, that untrusted jobs can actually brick devices, because if they just erased internal memory on most devices, like this would just permanently brick the device, because you have no bootloader left. or not the bootloader that's actually required. And like reflashing some devices is impossible without having the manufacturer tools. And with some other devices, yeah, you still don't really want to have this because then you need to actually manually recover the device, which is not great. It's like we are aware of essentially what we're doing here. So we also have a decent amount of documentation available. It could definitely be more, but for example, we have some basic information about the whole architecture, a bit of what I'm presenting today, and then we also, for example, documentation of, for example, for the Pixel 3a, what you need to do to actually get the device hooked up. So in this case, you take out the battery. And you actually need to, in this case, remove a small PCB that's kind of on the battery pack because it contains some components that the phone is still wants to have available. And then we solder the cables from that are connecting to the PCB to that, and then we can put it back in essentially. In that case, but for different devices, it's different. So like, but we try to document this so that somebody else can and also. Do follow the steps and make this work on their device. So, like for the tests that are actually running on a device, there's different sort of categories of tests that could be run. Like some kernel tests, so like low level integration, and like for example checking if all of the kernel drivers are actually probing that should be probing. And this we currently have integrated with a project called BootRR. Which is a sanity checker for boards under automated test, which is doing checking fairly basic checking, but it's also very useful to have, and sort of a very low level sanity check if everything is okay. We do want to have boot tests, so essentially replicating the same way that a end user would use their device. So then actually flashing, for example, the rootFS on the internal storage and then booting with the normal way because this exercises some different code paths than would be, for example, for the let's say, simple kernel tests where we just boot into an inner DrumFS and just have the test run there. But then actually having the inner DrumFS find the rootFS and then mounting it and doing everything that's required there. This we're currently missing. And we also don't have any system tests yet, so like sort of the end-to-end tests. So like, for example, trying to see if the sensors are still reporting any data. Trying to see, can we connect to a Wi-Fi network? Can we get internet connection via this Wi-Fi network? Maybe even different Wi-Fi networks. I mean, who knows? Is the device connecting to mobile network? Is mobile data working? So a really lot of things could be automatically tested there. Of course, with some of the tests, I mean, for example, with Wi-Fi, you would need to have a Wi-Fi access point available. With mobile data, you need a SIM card available in the device. So like some tests would then require some more setup on the person running the board farm. And even, SIM cards cost money. So it's not something you can just buy once and have working forever. But it's also something that really would help us, make it a bit better. So look a bit forward to like what we want to achieve. So currently we have OnePlus 6, 6T, Pixel 3a, the Ruxa Dragon Q6a, and the FFM4 connected to the PCBs. I don't think all of them are currently registered in the GitLab. It's at least a start, and we believe that we are really like we can expand a bit more because right now we have about 20 PCBs available, and we've also got a lot of requests from like other people and people in the team to like where can I get this PCB? So we are trying to order some more in the future. And we also have a process already for community members to get like one of these PCBs or multiple of them. We really need to improve the documentation there, like make it easier for people to get this setup running on their side. When you boot up CI-tron, so like the gateway for the first time, like the user experience is a bit wonky. It's like it, you don't really get any output, and it takes a while to get the whole machine booted. And if something goes wrong, you don't really know what went wrong. And we really, I mean, as was on the last slide, we really need way more tests. Like, we have very simple tests right now, and we can really use way more there. Yeah, that's a bit then the open questions that we have. So like, yeah, how can we scale this up properly? How can we get more devices in there? Like, what is actually currently existing already? Like, I'm sure there's other open source projects that are already doing some amount of validation for kernel testing, SOC validation, and all of the system integration. I mean, I'm sure like we don't have to write everything from scratch. I'm sure we need to write a bunch of code. I'm sure there's plenty available already. We just need to, yeah, we're just not really aware of it. We're not really sure like what the reliability of devices in the board farm is. So like if you have 50 devices hooked up and you're running tests on them over a whole year, like how many of these devices just kind of drop off or like have issues that need to be resolved? Like how many need manual intervention because it has gone into a weird mode or something? It's like we haven't really explored that part. Like we don't really know like how many tests do we really need to add to like have a noticeable impact on like how reliable PostMarketers is, and like whether we can donate some devices or PCBs to upstream projects, for example, to, yeah, I mean, Linux kernel would be an obvious thing, but also having modem manager be able to actually test on different devices in a fairly automated way would be super useful, probably. And yeah, just hoping this is going to help other FOSS communities and is, yeah, helping catch more regressions and not just for us. I put some more links on the slides in case you want to learn more. So on docs.postmarketers.org, we have the hardware CI and the phone harness sections. On the blog, we have written a bunch of documentation. We've kind of had update posts there, and with lots of pictures of devices hooked up there. And you can also surely find more on our Mastodon page. That's linked here. That was it from here. Thank you very much.
Any questions? Yeah, thanks for the talk. Two quick questions. First, about the PCB, did you try to partner with some company that produces open source hardware, like, I don't know, Olimex, for instance, if they would be interested in producing them and selling them on a larger scale so that maybe also other projects could profit from it? And second question, did you consider, because I mean, testing the phone without the battery leaves out a class of potential faults undetected. Did you consider doing something like some, I don't know, battery stub simulator that would, I don't know, tell you if it's charging, discharging, or something that behaves like a battery but is in fact not a battery?
So first part about selling the PCB. So right now we are just essentially ordering them ourselves from an online PCB maker. And I mean, generally, since it's open hardware, like anybody can do this. Of course, it takes a bit of clicking around and like getting the different components together in their online search. So far, we have not explored like selling them, like actually selling them on a bigger scale, because we still need to kind of figure out like if the PCB is actually doing exactly what we want, and like it's also stable enough to, yeah, to kind of that we want more people to have this. So right now, like our process is like we can with the donations we can finance getting some extra PCBs for like community members that want to set up something on their side. But yeah, maybe in the future, like if this is really super useful PCB for like a lot of people, like if thousands of people want to order it, then yeah, we may want to look into something like this. For the battery sort of simulator stub thing, Yes, we right now, of course, yeah. If you do it with a battery, you can't really test, for example, if the charger driver is working correctly. At least on newer devices, yeah. I mean, inferior charger is handled by the firmware, so like there's in theory not really much that can go wrong there, because you're talking to the firmware via a specified protocol. But no, right now we don't have anything set up there. If you know some references to like where, for example, open hardware things, where they have to have some battery stops, would be super useful if somebody knows. But yeah, feel free to put suggestions our way of like how this can be even more useful. More questions?
So as I noticed, you try to get a newest Linux kernel working on these devices. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, PostMarketers generally we use the latest Linux kernel, okay. And with the testing, like actually using the latest mm-hmm. kernel, would be really useful. Yeah, to catch anything that has slipped in through patches.
I just thought in theory Android is Linux in some way, and there are working kernels which in theory can access all of their hardware. Is it like what's stopping us from using those to get full functionality?
I've had previous talks that cover a lot about this topic, but essentially, like all of the Android kernels are just super outdated. They have millions of lines of code like on top of upstream. And like in the long term, it's just really not sustainable to like keep all of these patches around, or like all of the changes of line changes. And a lot of the downstream drivers are also just not made in a way that can be compatible with what we want to do, like with just regular Linux software.
Yeah, I basically had the same question, just asked in a bit other way. So how reliant are you still on these vendor-specific kernels? For example, if you have a Fairphone, and can you just put the mainline Linux kernel on there, or how is the progress there? Because last time I checked it out, it was like you had to use these weird vendor kernels where, yeah, you could just hope Broadcom or whoever makes your SoC gives you updates for the next, I don't know, 10 years, but that kind of sucks because most of the time they just don't do that.
Mm-hmm. So like when you boot the upstream kernel, which I mean, it is like I showed in one of the slides, like the feature table. So like it's not fully complete yet, for sure. Like there's still plenty of things missing, especially like smaller, maybe non-obvious things. But like when you boot the upstream kernel, like it's completely upstream kernel. Like it's not with anything extra. That's like you can actually just go to kernel.org, download the latest release, compile it, and then boot it on the device, and it should work fairly well. There's definitely some things missing for sure. But yeah, in that way, we are not like with PostMarketers, we are then not relying at all on like Qualcomm to be updating their 5.4 kernel anymore. But we can just go to the latest version we developed there. We get that working. Thank you.
I'm curious, what's the approximate bill of materials cost of the boards? Is it like, I don't know, 100 euros or something? Or
for the PCBs?
Yeah, like if you're ordering in small quantities.
Is it a big part of the problem? It really depends on how many you order.
Right, yeah.
I don't really have to... I mean, it's like 25, 50 euros. Like, the, okay. I think if you order a lot of them, you can get it for 25 or something.
Great.
Alien, correct me if I'm wrong.
Power supply is the most important, yeah. Expensive. What is the power supply that you're using, by the way? Is it?
I think the power supply is some new ones we can get for like 12.50 a piece, yeah, like a USB charger. Alien, you can take the microphone if you want. Cool. Yeah.
So you need like specific power supplies which can have like the PPS voltages that we need for powering phones and reliably with like little fluctuation. Until recently, we only found one single power supply which had the specifications we needed, which was then discontinued by the manufacturer. So we had like power supplies that cost like, I don't know, 30 euros, which was more than the PCB. And now I think they found new power supplies which are way cheaper, so the overall cost is going to go down a lot, which is very good because we want to make them as cheap as possible.
But I think the PCB itself is like less than 50 euros.
Okay.
Yeah. If you order one of them, it's probably more expensive because of just the whole PCB manufacturing cost. But
and one other question, thank you for that, by the way. What is the division of labor between the USB-C and the UART port in terms of testing? Like, what do you use one for versus the other?
I mean, essentially, UART would just be used for getting the logs out, I believe. I'm not sure right now whether, like, if we are sending any... It's like, honestly, like, I have not set up the full system on my side yet. So, like, it's mostly, like, seeing what other people have done there. So I'm not quite sure, like, if we also use the UART to actually talk to the device or if we just get logs out and then use USB, like, if we want to do anything extra. But so far, I think the low-level boot test that we're doing with the boot RR, we just send essentially the fully complete InnoDromFS to the device and it just spits out everything and then we just analyze the log. And like we know whether it was successful or not, but with more other tests, probably USB would be, I would imagine, more reliable, because you are like, in case like you're moving the wires a bit, like if it's not completely static in a or like not completely encased, let's say, I mean the UART wire could fall off, like if it bends weirdly, it's like probably USB would be more reliable there, but yeah.
Is testing displays also something that has been considered, like hooking up the display of the phone and it grabs the image and maybe like compares it to a test image?
Fully end-to-end tests with a display, I'm not sure how easy this would be. It's like having a camera pointed to it and then kind of machine learning, analyzing like whether the correct pixels are displayed. I think it's a bit out of scope. The basic thing would already like, is the kernel showing any errors regarding display? This is already, I think, 99% of what really is needed. It could also be, I know with the Qualcomm graphics stack, there's a thing called a write back, I believe. So you can sort of render everything and actually still inside the SoC, grab back what it was rendered, but it's more of than Qualcomm internally, like inside the SoC to make sure that the rendering is happening correctly. So like actually not really then talking to the display yet. But it usually like if you don't get any weird timeouts of like, I don't know, some overrun or underrun or something, then like usually it just works. Because the display hardware would notice like if something was really wrong.
Thank you.
And of course, a bit of manual testing would always be required. And I think it would be very obvious, like if the screen would just be corrupted completely. So
yeah, maybe just a note. So if you could get the display output, there are things like OpenQA, mm-hmm. which already does this screenshot comparison, run this, compare screenshot to this, and so on. Mm-hmm. So I think this would open really a lot of possibilities there.
But would this also work with imperfect pictures, like from webcams?
Yeah. It has like something like a threshold, so it says that if it matches to 98%, because mm-hmm. they are using it often to test, for instance, installers for desktop operating systems, mm-hmm. and sometimes you have then the effect that everything is fine, but then suddenly the pop-up with there are some new updates available shows up, and then you want to say, okay, this area, please don't compare it, and mm-hmm. so on. So there are already things that could mm-hmm. be used, I think, on top of that, if you would get the display input.
Yeah. I would be a bit worried, like if the, for example, the lighting conditions inside the board rack changes, like for example, if it's daylight or if it's night, then like the picture will look very different.
No. I mean, if you connect it to, for instance, the MIPI interface on the board to get the display, not filming it with the camera, getting the image actually.
Yeah, technically probably possible. If it's feasible. And if it makes any improvements into what we need, I'm a bit doubting that, to be fair. But I mean, it's definitely like future extensibility is definitely like we are definitely looking into like what more we can do there. But thanks for the suggestion.
Yeah. From how I understand this, now you have this setup fully that you can flash the software and it automatically starts. So my question would be now, maybe a bit naively, wouldn't this now allow to have like very simple tests for example, the network functionality that you mentioned, that basically having an init script that tries to connect to the Wi-Fi, then tries to connect to the server, and if it does not work within like 5 minutes, you get a timeout, then you would have a very simple like Wi-Fi test, for example. Have you already looked into this?
No, but this is exactly what we want to have. It's like having something like this, like just stupidly connecting to Wi-Fi. I mean, it's already a good sign, and especially if internet connection works. I mean, or like reaching some known address, it would be super useful. But yeah, we're always looking for contributors.
Yeah, I had a similar, probably out of scope question. I think you should just can you not just SSH in and take a screenshot instead of taking a camera? If the phone completely booted, and maybe also related to that, if you want to read end-to-end testing, then you could also have something that fakes touch inputs, right? That just clicks on buttons for you, similar to this, I forgot what it's called, the remote control for browsers, Selenium? I
think. Yeah, right.
So
this is on a different layer then again. So like then it's more, I mean, for example, yeah, it's essentially testing Fosh or some Plasma Mobile. On that side, I mean, would be probably very useful for the developers of Fosh and Plasma Mobile and all the other UIs to have something like this. So I'm not. I mean, it definitely would make sense to also have this in PostgreSQL, like in our CI. But I think this would generally be a bit more like for the upstream projects to maybe handle because they're way more at source there, and then kind of we. Look at the things, how we think, everything, essentially the whole system put together. And since we know that most of the regressions come from like kernel things, like kernel updates and like also random other components that are happening in the distribution, and it's usually not really the UI, like that the icon is now in a different place. Like this is usually not really, at least not the major things these are not the major pain points that we're currently having. But I think this would, I mean, this would also be like a good use case to have. But I think some of them you can also then probably do in a virtual machine and have it a bit more simpler, not without actually having a phone there. Because, yeah, the UI, if you put the form factor correct and maybe fake some things in the back end, like I think you can fairly well get a lot of these working.
Any other questions?
So you mentioned using CITron for your CI and contracting the author to adapt it to your use case. Mm-hmm. Does that work live upstream, or do you have that in a fork? Who maintains it?
This is completely upstream as far as I'm aware. So we don't have any changes that are not upstream. Aylin is nodding, so thanks.
I see. One other question. Do you have these jobs actually run on multiple devices now, or is it just singular devices for now?
So I believe every job is currently running on one device. It's like we don't do like, okay, we want to run this job now on 5 of the same phone. Could also be interesting for the future, but right now it's more of it's likely enough that all of the phones are behaving the same way, or at least we're hoping they're behaving the same way. But yeah, could be also interesting. Like essentially, like trying thing. Like if you want to try a test 100 times and see if it works 100 times, of course, it would make sense to like split this up over all of the available devices, and not have to run like 100 times on the same device. But of course, if you have 10 devices, then it's 10 each, and it's done much quicker. Especially if the other devices are still idle at the same time.
Oh, okay. Okay. One last thing. Have you caught any failures in terms of your checks?
I am not sure. I don't think that we have I don't think we have it used enough right now to have made an impact so far. And I'm not sure that we have much more than like the OnePlus 6 hooked up like properly and like or like permanently. We've experimented with a few more devices, and I have a few PCBs lying around that I really should work on, but there's a few different blockers that I would want to sort on my side, like to make it easier to hook them up for exactly devices that I am looking at.
Okay, I think I have time for one more question, so we'll leave it at this one.
There are some devices that support powering the device without a battery. Mm-hmm. I don't know of the phones, but for example, the Samsung Active Tablets. Mm-hmm. So does the setup support that, charging through USB-C without battery, or do you only support emulating the battery?
I am not sure the current PCB is able to provide that current to the device via the USB-C port. I know for some devices it is technically possible to boot them without a battery. So I mean, I know that the Fairphone 2, you could remove the battery at least when the screen was off, or like when when the charger was good enough, you could remove the battery and, for example, swap in a different battery, which I've done, like when the batteries were completely empty and I needed to kind of first trick the phone into booting up to then be able to charge the other battery. But I'm also aware that on at least some devices, I believe most devices, they actually have things directly hooked up to the VBAT, so like directly to the battery, and not first getting, let's say, powered through the same system where the... So I think the speakers and the vibration motors, I think, like, for example, I think especially vibration motors are hooked up generally to the battery directly. So like then it would probably be a bit of a weird... thing if the battery was then gone but the phone was still up alive. And I know on at least the Fairphone 4, because I've tried it, like if the phone thinks there's no battery, like the bootloader will start up, but then it would just show an icon like there's no battery and then just shuts down again. So it doesn't stay alive. So
it's the same on Fairphone 5.
Ah yeah, okay. Yeah. I would have imagined, because I don't think this was a I'm sure there's good reasons for that. Okay, that's it for the questions, and thanks a lot for coming.
Okay, thank you.